Susan Liu's ongoing project is coming to grips with the central event of her childhood. That's meant trying to better understand her Vietnamese family, and especially her mother, Jennifer Ha.
Mom was mega mom. She was super mom, right? Like, she was the maternal figure that helped sponsor everyone over. I mean, we bought a house 8 years after immigrating to America. You know, my dad eventually had a gardening business. My mom had her nail salon. All the family worked there. They were living that American dream. And I would say, yes, it was led by my mom.
Jennifer Ha died when Susan was 11 years old. Susan has spent much of her adult life trying to get to know her mother, even though the Vietnamese elders in the family, following tradition, won't talk about her. Susan lives in West Seattle, but she grew up in Santa Rosa, California. From the very beginning, Susan was part of the family businesses, especially her mother's salon.
From when I was about probably 5 or 6, on the weekends, I would get to go to the nail salon, and my job was to entertain the customers. I was taking off their nail polish, and I'd make them tea and coffee and go feed their meter and take change, and I would confirm appointments. We didn't have daycare. We didn't have summer camp. We had the nail salon. And at that point, it's about 1994. My mom has sponsored over her three sisters and her grandparents and a cousin, and we all live in the same house together with my three siblings. And there are always people flowing in and out of our house. So it's about 13 people in a 4-bedroom house. It's kind of like Brady Bunch, but for Vietnamese refugees. My sister and I shared a bed. There was a bunk bed with my aunts. There was another bed with two older women sharing a bed. So we were about 6 people in 1-bedroom. And this was very normal for me. You know, we would eat always communal style, always Vietnamese food. And I would eat all my favorite foods. I would keep eating my favorite foods until the point where people were like, you know, you should really stop. Because if you get too fat, no one's ever going to love you. And this was a recurring phrase that folks always said to me, my elders, my Vietnamese elders. And I had no idea that my mom also faced these pressures of feeling that love was conditional, that feeling that if her ao yai didn't look perfect on her body, that she wasn't enough. And I think it was perhaps, you know, having 4 kids, sitting down in her nail salon chair all day, not really having time for exercise or leisure. She worked 6-7 days a week. I had no idea that my mom also didn't love herself as she was, that she wanted to change herself. The day was Friday, September 27th, 1996. And I was 11 years old, and I really wanted to go to 6th grade volleyball tryouts. That morning, I was in the kitchen getting ready. I was up very early, and my mom was also up very early. She's asking me where I'm going, I'm telling her I'm going to go to volleyball tryouts, and she told me I can't. You know, you got to focus on school. But Ma, I'm the best student in the class. My teacher told me I'm the best student. I don't care. And we don't have money for the uniforms. And I was so mad at her. I looked at her and I told her I hated her. And my mom and dad are getting into the car. I'm not sure why they're leaving so early. And I slammed the garage door. I'm just like, I hate you. What I didn't know is they were going to a plastic surgery clinic to a doctor that they found in the weekly Vietnamese newspaper. He had placed all these ads saying he had volunteered in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. So everyone thought he was a good guy. My mom went in for a tummy tuck, the narrowing of her nostrils, and a chin implant. And about 2 hours in, she loses oxygen to her brain. She was without oxygen for 14 minutes before the doctor made the 911 call. And then my brother made the decision to pull the plug because she was too far gone. And that was the first day of the rest of my life. When my mom was alive, everyone was making food and my dad was singing karaoke, and it was just amazing. We were a proud Vietnamese family. And families would come over on the weekends, and it was always this big, amazing gathering. And after my mom died, that all went away very quickly. Now, instead of 13 people in a four-bedroom house, there's 3 people in a four-bedroom house. We're Vietnamese, and so there isn't this sense of, like, grief counseling and hugs and processing and checking in, right? There's this Vietnamese phrase, bỏ qua đi, throw it away and let it go. And everyone just needed to move on. And I would continuously ask, what was mom like and what happened, and tell me more. And everyone just said, bỏ qua đi. There were still the 5 of us, but we never talked about it. And we still haven't talked about it. I was in my 2nd year in business school, and all of my professors kept talking about the world is your oyster. If you want something, go pivot your career, go make it happen. If I can have anything, what do I really want? So it's late at night, doing a stats problem set. And then I realize, how did that guy get away with killing my mom? He lost his license for 4 years. We didn't get any money from him because he didn't have malpractice insurance. And he continued to practice for the rest of his life. But it wasn't just my mom. There was 24 other lawsuits. And I think that's what had really aggravated me, because he had targeted Vietnamese people with his ads. Hired a Vietnamese translator. 30% of his clientele was Vietnamese. That was what was aggravating, because they had no idea what they were walking into. And then I wondered, is he still alive? Is he still doing this to more women? And then I became obsessed. He was still alive. He was practicing in Alameda. And there were other lawsuits. So I realized, with all this power and privilege, I could finally do something. I had a specialization in marketing. So it became very clear to me. You know, I was going to do targeted Facebook ads. I was going to pay for billboards by his clinic, so to shame him, and then find local journalists to write an expose in him in the East Bay Express. It was very clear to me what I needed to do. And about a month before I was going to execute this campaign, I found out he died. So I'm facing a wall, and I feel like there's nothing I can do. So I kind of forget about it. You know, I move on with life. But it's on my wedding day in 2015, where it's very obvious my mom is not there, that I realize I still miss her, that I realize I don't know her, and that I realize I need to know her. So I started going on this journey. I keep asking my very stubborn family more questions. I start digging through thousands of pages of depositions. I was going through the medical board decision for the doctor. And it said, it was unusual that Jennifer Ha said that she was 110 pounds in all her documents, when really she was 140 pounds. And reading that one evening, I started to sob. I started crying because I'm 140 pounds. My mom's body and my body are the same. It's the same structure. If we were paper dolls and you put our bodies on top of each other, they would fit. So here I am spending years trying to figure out who my mom was, and then all of a sudden I realize the very thing that I hated all the time is the very gift that my mom left behind. I have her body, and that's right here. And through all this, I don't have any anger for the doctor anymore. I actually don't have any sadness that she's gone. I feel this life-giving sense of liberation and healing, because I know her, I feel close to her, and through our story together, we provide a sense of lightness and love to other people, because everyone experiences suffering. Everyone has had pain, whether that's, you know, loss or being an immigrant, or hating your body because of what people have said to you. We all experience suffering. It's universal. But the question is what do we do with that suffering? Do we give it care and attention? Do we put it under the rug? What are we going to do with it?